First impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585.
So, I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, "I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!"
To talk about, and I love Wednesday nights because I get to talk with this gentleman right here. How are you, Mr. Dale Batiste?
I'm okay, Ed. You sound muffled there. Are you sick, or is there problems with Blog Talk again?
It's probably a combination of both. I've been having problems with Blog Talk this week with some of that helicopter noise again. Right now, this weather is...
Okay.
Tell you, man, you can't get used to the weather here right now. One day you're colder than heck, the next day you're in the 40s, then you got snow, then you got ice, then you got...
I've heard a lot of people that they complain about this weather, Ed, and you know what I've heard? It's causing all this? Something called winter.
Oh, I agree with you. Yes, I know.
And these people can't drive in it. I mean, I'm behind all these ass-hats in traffic, and they can't drive in this at all.
Oh, that's very true. I tell you what, there's so many wrecks going on constantly these days.
Yep.
And, of course, the city has already used up most of the money they had set aside for winter. They're down to like...
What are they using for? Because they don't have any trucks out. Putting out salt.
Well, I disagree with you. My bet is this. Maybe I'm wrong. But they do their initial sweep through all the neighborhoods overnight. But my bet is this. Once that sweep is done by about 3:30, they've got every truck we've got over at the international airport so it can make UPS happy. That's what I think. That's where they're at.
That's probably true.
So who knows? But I tell you, we've got a lot going on. There is one story we've talked about last night. We're going to spend the first part of this show on Louisville and Kentucky issue because there's a lot going on. Since Steve Beshear decided to give his State of the Commonwealth address, which was very laughable, by the way. But yesterday we told everybody.
Did he get his job in the Obama administration yet?
Did he get what? Oh, the federal job?
Yeah. When does that come down?
That comes down after the filing deadline is passed. We expect that somewhere mid-February, mid to late February.
The day after the filing deadline.
You betcha. Which is why this next story is so important, because I hope, beyond hope, that there was a reason for this. Last night we told everybody that Louisville Metro Council, District 7 councilperson, Republican Ken Fleming, had decided he was not going to run for re-election this year. And what was interesting to me was the timing, because he announced it yesterday, 1 week shy of the filing deadline to run for office. And he said he wanted to spend his time with his family and the Kilgore group. So, we're just trying to figure out exactly what's going on. So, anyway, long story short, Courier-Journal interviewed Ken Fleming, and they're reporting today that Ken Fleming refused to rule out the seeking the GOP nomination for Metro Mayor. So
last night, he retired or stepped down when he did. And he put out that typical politician statement about, "Oh, I'm leaving open blah blah blah," which means don't turn your head or I'll be filing for another office. Like all this, it kills me how you have all these Republicans, mostly neocons, playing musical chairs. I'm a Metro councilman, I'll run for state senate. I'm a state senator, I'll run for council. I'm a House member, I'll run for senate. And it's mostly neocons doing it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, there's no doubt about it. And I tell you, it's really interesting because, you know, I've been screaming because nobody is stepping up to the plate to run for mayor and take on Greg Fisher, which means, of course, as I've been saying, that this is going to set it up for Fisher to go up to lieutenant governor. And Jim King to basically get the mayorship by default. He would sign up the last day. And maybe Ken Fleming knows about this, too, and hopefully that's exactly what's going on now. He's going to fight the last second of the monkey in the wood. So we'll see what happens with that. But I thought it was very interesting yesterday with the timing that I kept telling everybody, I don't know what's going on, but something's up. And the fact that he refused to decline today, when talking to the Courier-Journal, he refused to rule out seeking the GOP nomination for Metro Mayor tells me that maybe that was what the retirement was all about.
Well, I'll tell you one more thing funny about this Fleming story, and I thought I was right about this, but I can't keep up with the neocons because they're a dime a dozen. But I looked it up. Mm-hmm. Do you remember only 5 months ago who became the highly paid legislative assistant for Ken Fleming?
Who's that?
Shelley May.
I thought Shelley May was with Kevin Cramer.
That's why I said I can't keep these neocons straight. Is
she's with Kevin Cramer.
Okay, well, then I stand corrected. I get those two confused. I remember they were both neocons that were kissing her ass at the convention, so I couldn't remember.
Right. No, Kevin Cramer, but it's interesting, though. So I'm hoping
that would have been interesting because that just happened 5 months ago. I mean, I guess Cramer's running for re-election. I think Cramer's the one. Drew an opponent I'm coming up with this because I've only been home after being in traffic forever, but isn't Cramer the one who drew a Democratic opposition from Larry Hujo?
Well, funny you should say that because we're headed down that road as well.
Okay, I just wonder about that.
No, you're fine. Larry Hujo, as everybody knows, he's a labor union advocate. He served 3 terms on the Jefferson County Board of Education as part of the school board. He has filed as a Democrat to take on Kevin Cramer in District 11, Metro Council District 11, and he's not the only one that's filed papers late. We also have, he's the only one taking on Cramer. We also have retired Jefferson Circuit Judge Jeffrey Morris filed today as a Democratic candidate for Tina Ward Pugh's 9th District Metro Council seat. Yeah, that's like, what, 5 or 10 people now? I mean,
at least 6 people are running for office. That should be interesting. I know that the Republican, I saw one Republican had filed as of yesterday. You know, the Republican ain't got a chance in hell in the Highlands. So, once again, somebody's going to become a Metro Council person by getting like 17% of a primary vote.
Well, you know, that really makes it interesting, too, because, you know, Tina Ward Pugh never really faced any competition in a primary. They just felt that seat was a lock and nobody wanted to take her on. But now that she's retiring, all these daggone sharks smell blood in the water. Now you've got, former judges, you've got attorneys, you've got housewives, you've got realtors. It's fascinating to me the game of politics and how these people think. But it is interesting. And we've also, like I said, again, we've got Larry Hujo just filed, and there was a couple more that filed late today. I don't have those names for you yet. I'll have those. I'll send you a copy. Maybe you want to talk about them tomorrow night, or we'll get into it next week.
It'll be interesting. You figure we got 4 more days, Ed, for people to file. And I guess if I wasn't a working stiff who had to pay all these ridiculous taxes and fees and services that our city and state rapes us anally over, if I didn't have to pay all those anal rape taxes, I'd love to be down in Frankfort, or I guess the other one would be Barron Avenue on Tuesday to see who strolls into these offices at the last minute.
Oh, I agree with you. I agree with you. It's going to be interesting to see what happens. And, by the way, I have to go on record now. A couple of weeks ago, I told everybody I'd been asked to run for mayor. I was promised a bunch of backing. from the establishment. And to be quite honest with you, it's not a race that I'm going to get into. So I will not be taking on Greg Fisher if nobody else does, because quite frankly, I just don't have the time to do it. You know, it wouldn't be fair to constituents to go out there and waste their time. So I won't even entertain the idea. So I'm definitely out, and hopefully somebody else will step up to the plate, and I hope it's Ken Fleming. He'll be able to do that now if he wants to. But so far, Greg Fisher is the only one who has filled out the paperwork and filed to run for mayor. So we'll see what happens, because I don't expect that to stay anyway because of the deal we talked about last week. In the meantime, out here in my neck of the woods, out in southwest Jefferson County,
yep.
PRP High School Principal David Johnson he was placed on non-instructional duties today.
He gets paid his $144,000. That's a lot to work 9 months of the year, and so that means he gets paid the same amount, but they just juggle him around to another office somewhere, right?
Well, essentially that's it. They put him on non-instructional duties, whatever that means. He is now working out at a central office. I'm assuming he's working out there off a Newburgh Road facility. You know, while the district continues to investigate allegations against David Johnson and the school's activity fund being used improperly. Basically, I mean, for the background on this, this is purely regarding expenses that David Johnson just flat out didn't keep paperwork with. It involves as much as $300,000 that is supposedly unaccounted for. You know, the thing is, the Office of Education Accountability released a report in December that told everybody that David Johnson was allowing a private business to operate on school property, and that $300,000 were improper or undocumented. The private business was actually Coach Bill Miller, who takes care of all the fields and everything else, was actually running a business out of there, which was kind of surprising. But at the same time, JCPS officials also said that many of these allegations against him today go all the way back to 2010 and had already been rectified and already discovered, and David Johnson had already worked to correct those problems. So this isn't something that are new charges, but I did find it interesting. The Courier-Journal did an open records request, and we found out that Johnson was given a written reprimand in 2007 for insufficient supervision and evaluation of personnel, which doesn't surprise me. I know him. And he was also suspended for 2 days in 2007 for violating the district's procurement policies. And that's the policy they have in place that manages and controls supplies, construction services, all that stuff. So, you know, they also made
it. I have to ask you real quick here, Ed. Did this principal, and obviously, you know, in full disclosure, I did also, I attended and graduated from PRP many, many moons ago. Did this principal learn the tricks of the trade of this thing by the guy who was principal before him? I'm just curious.
Well, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if State Representative Charlie Miller.
Hey, I have a happy day.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me much if he did. But, you know, at the same time, you know, I know David Johnson. My kids went to school there. I was involved in school. He was their principal at the end and things like that. So I know David Johnson. And I tell you, you know, Dave's one of those guys that is laid back and really doesn't pay much attention to detail. He really doesn't. Why he's principal in that kind of a situation that they would put that kind of power in his hands is beyond me, because you want somebody who's got a firm hand and firm control, and that's not David Johnson. However, they did go on record, the district did go on record to say that Johnson was unaware that Bill Miller had been operating this business on school property. So they let him off the hook for that, and we'll see how it goes. But right now he's been relieved of his duties, if you will, and we'll take it from there. You know, we'll take it from there.
So he's on
in the meantime,
vacation,
go ahead. Right now?
I think he's on paid vacation, basically.
Yeah, basically.
I mean, I don't know if they got him, like, parking cars over in Newburgh or what, but I talked to a couple guys today, and like I said, I did attend and graduate from that school many, many moons and years and decades ago, and I had somebody tell me today when they were, you know, they were a fan or a friend or at least favorable of the principal, and they thought, in their opinion, that this was all, and I'm just telling you what one unnamed source who also went to school told me, they thought that this was all on Bill Miller, and he basically is like the Teflon Don. I guess nothing sticks to him is what I was told.
Well, Johnson is good about making sure nothing sticks to him. But at the same time, you know, most of these expenses involve, you know, the grounds equipment and the business that Bill Miller was running. You know, if Johnson didn't know about that, then he should have known about that. That's his facility. That's his school. He's the boss. You know, so that's one of those you can take it whichever way you want to kind of deals. But there was also a lot of questionable spending. You know, like the South Carolina trip when the baseball team went there. Johnson went 3 days before the baseball team, paid $1,900 for a condo for a week, and the baseball team was there for a couple of days and stayed in, you know, a Comfort Inn or something like that for $90 a night. You know, so he overspent money that he wasn't supposed to. And, of course, he's been ordered to pay that back. And from what I understand, he has been making restitution on that. So, you know, I mean, it's just a lack. It sounds to me like Johnson's laid-back style has really just become a hindrance because, you know, if you're not watching the hen house, the rooster's going to come in and do whatever they want. You know,
it goes back to being government and union. You tell me, Ed, in the jobs you worked, and again, you know, I'm not a big fan of unions, but as a private person, even with a union, we'll throw that part out because I guess it all comes down to government. In the jobs you worked, union jobs in the private sector, what would have happened if you had done this? Wouldn't you have been kicked out on your ass?
Oh, I've been fired in a heartbeat. There's no doubt
about
it.
Yeah, so why is it that – so that's what I said. In fairness, I have to take out the union aspect because again, I know that there are a lot of private union workers in Louisville. So I'm thinking that even if you were a union worker in a private job, now the union would go to bat for you, but you would never get this comfy job. I mean, this is far above and beyond when Ford would sit people in watching movies and reading crosswords in that one little center they had. This is a lot worse than that because I don't think anybody at Ford made the kind of money that this principal makes for 9 months a year.
Oh no, no, they don't. They don't make $144,000 a year. Believe me, it is very interesting. We're going to pay attention to it going forward. And you actually mentioned units. I'm actually going to get into that here in a few minutes, but that's a discussion that needs to be had as well because of the Supreme Court cases going on right now. We'll discuss that in a few. But we have other news. Steve Beshear. In his State of the Commonwealth, has decided to ask the legislature for a $190 million increase in Medicaid spending over the next 2 years. But, of course, and I said that with a straight face, but I can't do the rest because then he made an issue to stress that the money was not going to pay for Obamacare. you know, we know 690,000 Kentuckians went to the Kentucky Next Insurance Exchange to sign up for Obamacare, and the majority of those were redirected and got into Medicare. So, you know, it's this misdirection stuff that always drives me nuts. And, of course, you know, then he's going to play the game with kids because it's coming up on an election year. You got to be a good Democrat. So now we're going to reverse these cuts to child care assistance program for working parents and all this other crap that's going on. Anyway, the bottom line is everything he's had to say last night was a joke from word go. And one of our good friends, David Adams, who is still fighting, you know, filed a lawsuit and still fighting to reverse Steve Beshear's executive order expanding Medicaid, you know, he also told the truth and told the whole world. You know, here Beshear is saying none of this money is geared for Obamacare, but Steve Beshear, in the last half of 2013, started last September, slipped a 40% increase into Medicaid administration that nobody was watching. So this money in Medicaid is not coming from the feds. This is a 40% increase from our state taxes that went into Medicaid. And here Steve Beshear is trying to convince us that, oh, no, 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 it's paid for by the feds. We know better. We know better. So, you know, everything he's been saying about that has actually been a lie. And it really makes it interesting, Dale. Well, go ahead, Dale. Comment on that, because I got some other things I want to get into.
Well, I've said this about Beshear. He became maybe the luckiest guy to ever run for governor. I mean, we see Republican governor in Virginia getting indicted. We've seen what happened in hell in Illinois. They got a trolley that goes straight from the governor's mansion to prison. So we see all these governors get in trouble, and Beshear's got to be, mentioning Teflon Don, one of the luckiest men ever. He had the he had the pleasure of running against Fletcher for governor and kicking his ass. And then we had, look who they ran against him this past time, the neocons darlings, Blackjack Williams and Little Richie Farmer. And now you got Blackjack Williams took a comfy judge's seat, and Richie's going to be watching his seat behind bars. So, I mean, this was their darling team, and this is what Bashir got to run against. So I'm sure he feels entitled because nobody ever put any serious challenges up against him. I look at him like I look at Obamacare, and I just shake my head because some things you just got to wash your hands of and try to move forward.
Well, you really do. And, you know, as much as you want to move forward, though, they keep dragging you back.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's what drives me crazy. We keep dragging us back. It's like this whole Obamacare change. We should have been through talking about Obamacare a year ago.
Yep.
But they keep bringing everything back. You exempt this guy. You exempt that guy. You do this stuff. You slide in 40%. You're lying about, you know, and at the same, while all this is going on, we the people are losing more of our constitutional laws, where we're losing more of our constitutional privileges. And, you know, when you look at the big picture, every day our neighborhoods, our cities, our states are being deteriorated. Here's a great example. You know, since we got to talk about the Obamacare exchanges, since we have to talk about Medicaid, you know, Kentucky just received a grade from the American College of Emergency Physicians. You know, emergency care physicians basically get graded by these people every year. And they grade each emergency care place, you know, equally. I mean, they do everybody. Well, anyway, according to Ryan Stanton, president of Kentucky's chapter of the American College of Emergency Physicians, the national state-by-state rankings of emergency care in Kentucky, we received a D grade. D as in dog, folks. It's the lowest mark for medical liability and patient safety categories we've ever received. In 2009, we were a lot higher. Since 2009, we've dropped to 47th out of 50th. So now we're at the bottom for emergency care positions, or conditions, I should say. You know, what gives? And we're continuing to push this faulty Obamacare and everything else. I mean, what's really going on here, Dale?
Well, in the state, we see decades ago in the state where they ran out competition among insurance companies, and I understand it's popular and cool to go after insurance companies, and I don't fault them too much. I fault the people. I fault the people for electing these bastards. I fault the doctors who are pocketing the money, but I feel sorry for a lot of doctors because why would you want to be a doctor in Kentucky with what's going on? I was just reading a story about how registered nurses are one of the most high-paying careers out there. But if you're starting out as a nurse and a doctor, why would you want to do it, especially in a environment with Obamacare? It's just going to run people to a kind of a Atlas Shrugged mentality.
Well, and, you know, our good friend Paul Holliger over Stop is, he's pointing out in the chat room, you know, the obvious, that Kentucky is racing to the bottom because of the Democratic leadership. And I think that's very, very true. It's something that continues to go on. Have no clue why. And, you know, we continue trying to be substandard. And it makes no sense to me. But, you know, we're going to continue to do this. And now, this session, you know, as we've talked before, because you like to use the term Blackjack Williams and stuff, and we've talked many times on this show, I have no problem with legalized gambling.
Nope.
But I do have a problem if it's not fairly done. And
yep.
We ran into some issues today. The Family Foundation, who has been fighting this because they don't want it at all, you know, they actually pointed out something constitutional that they will fight legally if they have to. But according to Stan Cave, he's a general counsel for the the Family Foundation. He said the state lawmakers are actually violating the state constitution if they approve legislation on expanded gambling, because we do not have a constitutional amendment that allows gambling in the first place. And according to Cave, he says the case law says that the General Assembly can only enact legislation which is authorized by the Constitution. And if the Constitution prohibits gambling, which right now by definition it does, then they can't enter into any legislation until that constitutional amendment is made. And he's right. So are they going to try to run the gambling gambit and put it on a ballot in November and try to get away with that, knowing they're going to face this legal challenge?
Well, I think we pretty much all agreed on these airwaves that the problem we had with that last gambling fiasco of a bill, excuse me, was because it was the casinos that were going to be only at racetracks. I got out a map of the state and looked at it, and you had very few areas of real estate where you could have had a casino unless it was one of these race casinos where it'd be run by the racetrack. And we all agreed on the airwaves here, I believe, you and me and Mr. Martin and Ken Moman, we all agreed that that wasn't fair. And I know the word fair gets thrown around a lot. I just think you need more gambling that doesn't involve the government. The biggest piece of gambling we have in our state is the Kentucky Lottery, and no one ever knows what comes of that. We kept hearing it was all going to go towards education. So why is it, and that was mostly Democrats who pushed that, so why is it that government gambling like the lottery didn't ever do what it was supposed to do for education, or we wouldn't hear them whining and bitching about needing more money in education? Why is the government is the answer? We know government's not the answer, but again, these legislators only want to pass a bill if it benefits who's padding their pockets. And the gentleman made the comments today, I heard his soundbite, and when you listen to WHS radio, it's like the worst you can ever listen to for news. They don't really have any news department at all. They're ridiculously right. bad. But that being said, I heard a soundbite today. Was it Stan Cave or was it Ostrander? Somebody made a comment today that I just wanted to laugh in their face. They said that basically when we allow casino gambling, that we're just making these people into government tax collectors. Did you hear that?
You know, I didn't hear that remark, but
I don't know if it was Cave. It was somebody backing the anti-gambling bill. It was somebody tied to the Family Foundation. So I want to say it was Kent Ostrander, but I could not swear to it. And, you know, on one hand, I agree that I've been one of those people who was called the lottery, a tax on the poor. But here's the problem. You can't have a tax, Mr. Ostrander, Mr. Cave. You can't have a tax if it's fully voluntary. I wish we could have those kind of taxes. I wish the taxes they take out of my paycheck at the point of a gun without me having any say in the matter, because I don't pay taxes. They take taxes. I wouldn't pay them if I had the choice of paying for them like I would a hamburger. They take them from me. So if he's saying that those are taxes, I don't know anybody that's going to make you or me or Mr. Martin go to a casino. When David Williams was seen on a regular basis at the casino across the river in Indiana, and he kept telling the good people of Berksville he'd protect them from this, nobody made him go over there. So it really pisses me off when they say that we're making these casinos into tax collectors, because you're choosing to go there. Nobody chooses to pay taxes.
I think there's some truth in what you're saying as well. You know, the interesting thing is that we're still in the same boat, because House Speaker Larry Clark has actually got two bills up to expand gambling, House Bill 67 and House Bill 68. 67 basically is a general casino gambling bill that will allow the General Assembly to permit casino gambling by general laws. So what that means is that's the constitutional amendment portion that he wants to put on the ballot, but it's so generalized it's not going to do anything. And then you've got House Bill 68. This is what actually enables the legislation. And what this does is Larry Clark's plan, he wants to license and regulate casino gambling at 5 horse tracks and only 3 standalone casinos, that the General Assembly is going to pick and choose who's the winners and losers here. That's not fair either. And then, of course, we look at everything else, and we've got our lovely Senator Dan Assheim, who's basically going along with this now too. He's already put an amendment together in the Senate that's going to allow casino gambling at 7 places throughout the state, and guaranteeing 10% of all the revenue to promote the horse industry. And then the rest is supposed to go to job creation, education, human services, health care, veterans bonuses.
This is why I'm torn on these things, Ed. I'm not torn about the bill, because I don't think there should ever be a bill that props up the horse industry like this. But I'm torn because I do go to the track on very rare occasion, and I like the horse racing, but I don't think they should control the state like they do. And we know that they have the biggest lobbyists. So I guess I'm going to have to see. You have a much better chance of talking to your state senator than you ever have talking to a U.S. senator. Since Dan Assheim is my state senator, I guess I'm going to have to see if I can have a talk with him. I know Dan Assheim from way back when he was the vet slayer, and I guess I'm going to have to ask him, you know, between me and you, Dan, did the Churchill Downs Pact give you a lot more money? You know, what's going on here?
Well, you know, and the Churchill Downs doesn't pay any taxes, zero, not a zilch. because they don't own the land, so they don't even pay property taxes. We do. And it's interesting on Dan Stein's position, because as long as David Williams was Senate president, Dan Stein was next to David Williams fighting against casino gambling.
Yep.
Totally against it. And now the first year that, he's gone and Senator Bob Stivers is now the Senate majority leader, well, now Dan is for casino gambling. So you know, I don't
bad
like
for him, too, because he was like a heartbeat away from the state Senate president, if you want to use that term borrowed. And he did a lot of campaigning for David Williams, and I kind of feel bad for him because I know he's got to be ashamed now of doing all the campaigning for Williams and Farmer after what they've become. But I remember an event that was at a church of all places, where this was back in the primary of the governor's race, Ed, and I don't know if I've told you the story on the air or not, but it was, again, we knew we had a primary. We had Phil Moffitt, we had Bobby Coleslaw, and we had David Williams. And again, this was at a church where they took a straw poll. I showed all these people were for Phil Moffitt and not David Williams. And I felt bad for Dan Stein because he was out there defending Williams. And Williams showed up, but Williams didn't want to face the wrath of these godly people because he didn't want to have to answer questions about why he goes and gambles, but then pretends like he's against gambling. And this is the time I got to confront David Williams in the lobby of this church. And as a typical bully, he tried to bully me. Well, I'm not a little guy, so I didn't let him bully me. And I got right in his face, and I said, you can't bully me like you do these other people, David Williams. And I asked him, I said, you know, what about these casinos that you go visit all the time? Why is it okay for you but not the rest of the state? And in his typical feminine voice, he said, I don't do that anymore. So there you go. This is an actual true story. I had witnesses there.
Oh, I believe you. That's the problem.
On the airwaves with me. And it's like, you know, he got up in my face and he said, you're just pro-gambling. No, I'm just anti your prostitution ring that you call family.
The sad part is I believe every word of that because I've been there in the same situation, and it's kind of nuts, but what do you do?
I mean,
right?
I know I get a lot of heat on the network here because I pick on David Williams so much, but again, don't go over somewhere and gamble all the time, you know, and then come back and say, oh, never let them bring gambling here. I mean, he was true to his word. He did all he could to keep gambling from coming to the good people of Berksville, but how many people there in Berksville knew he was a hypocrite? And how many of them really thought that he was this big anti-gambling crusader is what I want to know.
Well, I think that's a very valid question, and one we'll never have answered.
Yep.
You know, because as soon as the election was over, what did he do? He got his plush appointment, and that's that. He got his plush appointment, and Richie Farmer went to jail. You know, case closed. So, I don't know the answer to that, but I'm like you because I can't stand hypocrisy. I've always lived by the code that what's good for the goose is good for the gander.
I mean, the Cheryl
Gaines thing. It's okay for me. It's okay for you. You know.
Yeah.
I don't believe in that two sided.
I'll say this, Ed. I mean, you've been big on the charitable gaming thing, right? That's your thing.
Yep.
And I'm great with charitable gaming. I've often said to me the worst kind of gambling is the state controlled gambling. We would never allow the state to have an official state cigarette. My God, we ran the tobacco farmers into the graves. We sure would never allow them to have an official state bourbon, even though that is the beverage that Kentucky is known for, but we have an official state lottery. So, again, I think all gambling is great if people are choosing to do the gambling and people are running it and not these government conglomerates.
Well, I'll agree with that, too. And, you know, and it's interesting because you bring up the charitable gaming part of it. You know, charitable gaming is required. Most people don't know this. So this is what really just drives me nuts. The way charitable gaming works is if you're a charity, let's say the American Cancer Society, okay, all you're doing at these bingo halls is renting space. It's nothing more than a rental hall. It's no different than a Lions Club or anything else, any of these other rental halls around the city you rent for marriages or anything else. That's all you do. You know, you're renting the halls. So the people that own these halls aren't the ones who are profiting other than their actual rent or their lease agreement, which every business does. You know, but the state over the last few years has gradually put so many demands on charities that it's the only business that I know is charitable gaming. Even your regular charities don't have to deal with this. The only business that I know that if you run a bingo and you're a charitable gaming operation and that's how you fund yourself, you are required by law to make a 40% profit. If you don't report a 40% profit, the Department of Charitable Gaming comes in and shuts you down. And that's what happened to a lot of charities like Elder Serve and everything else. And it's been purely intentional because they started increasing those profit margins and started adding all these other demands on these charities. They started fighting a few years ago for horse racing, gambling, casinos. So that's what we're talking about. So that's why I fight on behalf of charitable gaming, because people like Elder Serve, who do exactly what their name implies. They serve the elderly. We're having bingos and fundraisers and all this other stuff, making their own money as a charity event to help all these elderly people. And they were forced out of business by the state. Now Elder Serve has to go to the Metro Council every year begging for $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 because they're not allowed to make it on their own. And that's always been the problem with me. You know, and here you've got the horse racing industry making millions of dollars a year in profits. And so I don't like it at all. I can't stand it because, again, they're going to pick the winners and losers. They've intentionally tried to squeeze charitable gaming out of business so that they could make more money for the Kentucky Lottery and or casino gambling if they could ever get it passed. And that's always been the biggest problem, you know, because we don't take care of business and make everything equal. That drives me nuts. And a good reason I brought that up, because this next thing here is coming from Wave 3. As we know, Louisville Republican Julie Denton and Lexington Democrat Susan Westrum have decided they're going to sponsor a non-smoking bill throughout Kentucky. Last night on KET's Kentucky Tonight with host Bill Goodman, they had a discussion about a lot of things, and one of it was this called comprehensive smoking ban that Julie Denton and Susan Westrum want to put. You know, and our good friend Ken Mulman, who hosts his own show right here on the MVM Radio Network at 7 o'clock on Sunday nights, Liberty Unbridled, make sure you guys check it out. But our good friend Ken Mulman was part of this panel discussion on Catch Kentucky last night.
Yep.
And he made the perfect argument, because it's an argument that should be. He says a private property issue, and a private property owner can decide whether or not to allow smoking on their property. As we've seen in northern Kentucky, many, many businesses chosen to be smoke-free voluntarily because market forces and consumers demanded it. The business owners responded to what their customers wanted. And that's the way it's supposed to work. For a Republican like Julie Denton, who's never seen a dollar she didn't like, just look at the passport health care crap we had a couple of years ago. You know, so for a Republican, Julie Denton, to sit here as a Republican and say that she has conservative values and believes in the rights of private business, to go out and do something like this, you know, and then you throw Dan Simon's flip-flop on the gambling issue because David Williams is no longer the sugar daddy. And we've got a two-party system here.
Well, you got two sides of the same coin. You got the phrase that we've made popular on here, the Uniparty, and I was proud of Ken on there. They had two people on there speaking for the statewide smoking ban. I don't think you're doing this intentionally, but you're being too kind when you say it's a non-smoking bill. It's an attempt to have an entire statewide ban on smoking. And Julie Carmen Rose Rodham Denton, whatever name she's going by now, she is a sponsor, and she's a Republican, and people need to remember she's a 20-year veteran of the state Senate who now is running for Metro Council.
Yep, and she's also the one who approved a passport health contract worth millions of dollars, and then took a job with the people she approved it with, a dental place down in Florida. She worked for them, took their money, and approved millions of dollars back. That's a kickback. Yep. It's pretty simple. She should be in jail and off over that, and nothing was ever done.
I won't even go that far. I'm just going to let people say, hey, look who's sponsoring this. Is the Republican sponsoring this? Remember, they claim to be smaller government, which we know the people in the establishment are not, and we know that she wants to double dip now so she can go into Metro Council. That our sources, people you and I both know, Ed, have told me that she would only have to serve a few years and then she could double / triple dip or whatever. But this debate that they had on government television the other night, I was proud of them because it was two friends of mine, like you said, the aforementioned Ken Mulman on the Sunday Night Show here on the network, and my other friend Jim Waters from the Bluegrass Institute. They were the two that were on there, and basically they were debating against the corrupt Kentucky Medical Association and the corrupt Chamber of Commerce. So Ken and Jim Waters showed the testicular fortitude that many of our nanny state Democrats and Republicans in government don't dare.
Well, you're right about that, and that you know, I like Jim Waters and Kim Mulman. You know, of course, you know how I feel about him. But, you know, these guys are doing the right thing. They're out there standing up for the right thing. And what's really interesting here too is the Kentucky Chamber of Commerce, and you almost have to laugh when you use that term, I know, but the Kentucky Chamber of Commerce also wants to contend and put out there that this bill by Republican Julie Denton and Democrat Susan Westrum to pass this smoking ban is going to be great because it's going to help the state attract new business. Once again, the so-called leadership in this state, the Chamber of Commerce, Republican Julie Denton and Democrat Susan Westrum, still not facing the reality. Not being smoke-free is not costing Kentucky business. What's costing Kentucky business is this asinine, high tax rate we rank at the top of as a city in Louisville and as a state in Kentucky, and then all the kickbacks and payoffs you've got to have to move a business here. And then you get into the whole 40 issue. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, if people want to pretend like this is about business, if you are going to start a business in Kentucky or move a business, God forbid, to Kentucky, how many people in Kentucky smoke? We know for whether we like it or not, it's a higher percentage than other states probably. So do you want to immediately eliminate that percentage of your customer base immediately by saying, yes, I want to come to a state which won't allow me to make my own decisions about my own restaurant? I mean, this is the kind of thing, yeah, it's a public place, and if people want to go watch the debate the other night on government television, Ken and Jim do a much better job than I'm doing right now talking about this, and that is to say these are public places, but they're still private businesses. And when they put on this farce, the corrupt Chamber of Commerce, that's their official name as far as I'm concerned, and the KMA, which is just high paid drug dealers, you know, that's one of those things where they put on the front, oh, businesses. Why would you want to bring a business here and immediately eliminate X percent of your customer base?
You know, that's exactly it. When you want to control the business, it's just like Agnes Scott saying, can't put a Walmart in the West End unless everybody gets hired there, lives right here within a mile of the place, and that you agree to be unionized, and that you're not going to pay less than X amount of dollars an hour. You know,
well, when
you
they
tell
do that against Walmart,
you can't.
Yeah, when they do that against Walmart, my thing is, I'm not a fan of Walmart. I don't like going into the Great Walmart of China, as I call them, where they wave the American flags and they'll prop up a few veterans at the door, and once you get past the veterans, everything else is made in China. I'm not a fan of them, but when you stand there and say we're not going to bring them into the West End, they give us a viable alternative. All these quote-unquote black leaders that don't win. I know I've heard you say plenty of times, Ed, about the reality about these black leaders and black ministers and preachers. But all these black leaders and preachers and ministers, if they don't want Walmart there, then get off their asses, get out of the pulpit for a minute, and start their own business and put it there where they don't want the Walmart. Put up a shut-up time.
I agree with you totally on that. I tell you, we're going to take a quick break before the hour is up. When we get back, a couple other little things to get into before we head out the door. So you're listening to the Extra Show right here on the MVM Radio Network. Stay tuned, folks. We'll be right back.
First impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. ErniesPrintShop.com. 502-969-8585.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springson of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
And we are back. Yes, right on the NPM Radio Network, home of LouisvilleSportsPolitics.com. Make sure you guys check it out. You can listen to replays of any of our shows up here at LouisvilleSportsPolitics or catch up on the latest. Heck, you know where we're going. We've got so much to deal with here in Louisville and indeed across the world. I tell you, you know, Dale, one thing I need to mention to you real quick. Target announced today, or I'm sorry, yesterday, that they're going to now end health care coverage for their part-time workers because of Obamacare. at the same time, today, they made an announcement that they're hiring 475 people at their offices in Minnesota. So for those who don't think that Obamacare is making a difference, here you go. Target has always offered part-time medical care for the part-time workers, and now, thanks to that, they're not going to anymore. Then, of course, we've got you know, people like UPS. Now they're no longer going to cover an employee's spouse if they have any other options for health insurance. So, of course, now we've got all their spouses that are going to be left off for worse care. You know, there's a lot of things going on here, so you know we really need to start paying attention to that. And I tell you, that we've got another issue that's going on right now, too. Washington, of course, was shut down because of snow, but guess who wasn't shut down, Dale? The U.S. Supreme Court.
The Moomoos, the Black Moomoos.
There you go. That was yesterday. I guess they sleep there. But yesterday, the Supreme Court heard arguments.
Image right there.
Yesterday, the Supreme Court heard arguments that they could essentially decimate the public employee unions. The argument is a simple one. The question is whether non-union members would be required to pay fees because they're benefiting from a contract that was negotiated by the union. And essentially what that means, folks, is there's a lot of people who opt out of being union member in the public employee sector that are working, you know, under a union contract. So since a union is negotiating, let's say, $10 an hour, for their union members, instead of you starting at $7 or $8 an hour, whatever they would normally pay for that job, you're going to make the same wage as a union member, and you're going to get the same benefits. Guess what? The union feels like they're entitled to getting union dues paid by you because you're benefiting from their work. Some people don't like it. The practice is known as a fair share fee. There's a lot of people who don't like that because they don't feel like they should have to pay fees on something they're not a member of, even though they readily admit they're benefiting from it. What do you think about that?
Well, I mean, I know you and I have gone back and forth on unions because I've been in unions, and my dad was a lifetime member of a corrupt union. And it's like, my thing is, we know private sector, we look at a Ford or UPS, we know the company negotiates. So I know you've made that point before, and I would definitely give you that point that the company went along with this or the unions couldn't be in there. Now, you and I know if a company, once they had a union, try to get rid of it, they get every union rep sitting on their ass across the country bust in, and they'd all be protesting with misspelled signs out in front of the buildings. But that being said, I don't know where I come down on this, because obviously if I worked for one of these companies and I didn't want to join their corrupt union, then I wouldn't want their quote-unquote fair share. I mean, it reminds me when they come up with these right-to-work-for-less crap, when we want to get states like Kentucky, I wish Kentucky would be a right-to-work state, and businesses would actually want to come here. We just talked about businesses. We just talked about Target. And Target, I'd be curious to see how they've made out or how they've lost out up in Minnesota where their headquarters is, because that's the land of 10,000 unions and taxes. So I don't know where I fall on this. You have more union seniority than I do, Ed, so what do you say?
Well, I mean, for me, I have no problem with the fair share fee, because for me, it's a simple concept. When a union, when you got a union employer, okay, and the public sector is a union employer, but when you've got a union employer and you sit down at negotiations, you negotiate everything. You negotiate benefit coverage, you negotiate wages, you even negotiate discipline. So when you're a union, you know, when this contract is signed and agreed on, these are the rules that the company, in this particular case, you know, let's just City Hall, Metro Hall, as an example. In this particular case, City Hall says, okay, these are the steps of discipline. If Joe Blow doesn't come to work tomorrow, he gets a written write-up. If he doesn't come to work the next day, he gets a one-day suspension. If he doesn't come to work the next day, he gets a three-day suspension. And the next day after that, he's fired. You have a certain steps of discipline that must be followed to make insurance on behalf of that union employee. Well, just because you opt not to be part of that union, you're still getting that same benefit. If you're non-union working at McDonald's, you don't go to work tomorrow because McDonald's is a non-union employer, they're going to fire you. You have no protection. You have no parents, if you will, depending on how you look at it. And then you get into the benefits. Non-union member is getting advantage of having the better benefit because the union fought and negotiated for it. And, of course, wages in most cases, I don't know of any that aren't, when you get into wages, typically union-paid wages are going to be at least 20% higher than what you have otherwise. So here you're coming in, instead of starting at $8 an hour, deciding you want to just skip work, you know, on your seventh day or something because you're bored that day, you know, you're getting an opportunity, you're going to be fired. But now you're coming in at $10 an hour, and you've got a discipline set that has to be maintained. You've got better benefits than you would have otherwise. I mean, the union has put work into you. So should they be paid, you know, a union, which is typically 1 or 2 hours of your pay a month, as most of them are, should they get paid union dues for negotiating on your behalf? If you're an employee who's getting $2 more an hour, you know, that's over $300 a month, you know, on a $10, or, well, heck, I mean, 40 hours a week. You know, so when you put all that into play, you're giving back $5, but you're gaining 150. I don't think that's a bad deal.
Well, like but I said, I know that this case before the Supreme Court is seen as some people call it a free speech issue, and I wouldn't even call it a free speech issue, but this whole fair share of union dues, again, I mean, remember, this is not the first time that they've heard oral arguments on this. And like I said, it's a mess to me because I understand you have an industry like the auto industry. We know Henry Ford revolutionized the whole being by basically inventing the assembly line, and we know that that was the way it's going to go down. We know the unions were going to come in there, and you're going to work with them or not work with them, and the businesses will make billions and trillions of dollars without them, and they'll make maybe a few less dollars with them. My biggest concern, and I know we don't have time to go into it, has always been that once these union workers, if it's a totally closed shop or a totally open shop, I'd be fine either way. But this ambiguous thing where some people are union and some aren't, that makes it harder for me to figure out which side to fall on, because if they truly are having their benefits negotiated and bargained for by the union, then I could see where I don't know how the Supreme Court will fall on the black moo-moos. They literally are usually more big government than small government. So I imagine that the fair share, quote-unquote, is going to stand on its own.
Well, I mean, the reality is this. If you both went in and got hired at the same place.
Yep.
Both hired stay at the same place.
Yep.
You had the option of joining the union, not joining the union. And here you've got to live comparing side by side.
Yep.
You're going to say non-union, you're going to get paid $8 an hour. Your benefits are only going to cover 75% of your medical coverage instead of 90 or 100%. And, you know, if you miss a day of work, we're going to terminate you. Those are the three simplest things in the world. Okay? That's what you get for being non-union. If you decide you want to be union, you're going to make $10 an hour. We're going to pay 90% of your medical costs. And if you miss a day of work, we're going to sit you down and give you a written warning and talk to you about it. But it's going to cost you $5 a month or $10 a month.
Yeah, I guess my question is how many businesses have this situation, Ed, where the example you just gave, where the two guys working next to each other, that literally arm to arm, one's union, one's not? Because I can tell you I've worked in plenty of union shops, never did a damn thing for me. Yeah, I got a little bit more per hour, but when there was a quote-unquote grievance, you had people who were doing on-the-job training, didn't know what the hell they were doing as union, quote-unquote, stewards. I can tell you I've worked in plenty of non-union shops, thank God, where I missed work and I was never terminated for it.
Well, I know, I've got the opposite experience. I've worked in plenty of non-union shops where you terminate people like work. You ought to work some of these $10 an hour shops over in Riverport. I mean, it's just, you know, who cares? Because we'll call tomorrow, we'll get you out here to do your job. They don't care. So there's no loyalty anymore today. But when it comes to the union shop, you know, most people don't, you know, you don't really think, when you get hired on at a job, you're not thinking about what's going to happen if I get in trouble because I'm going to screw up. Nobody takes a job intentionally, the intention of screwing up just so they can get in trouble. You take a job because you need the money and you're going to do the best job you can. That's the intent. So what you're talking about with the grievance process and the process stuff, you know, that's the next level. People take a job. You want money. You want insurance. You want stability. Now, the examples that you use in a union shop, you're not going to find anybody that's in a true private sector union shop that are not being treated equally and they're right. paying their dues and everything else. But when you get into the public sector, all of a sudden you have a choice on whether you want to pay dues or not. You know, it's like, why should I have to pay for something for you to benefit from? You know,
well,
that's the Democrat liberal handout mentality.
Right. Right, and the only time, you know, this one of the fair few times I might come around to the side of unions, and I only do so because if they truly are, and I haven't done my research on it, you're much more versatile in this topic than I am, but if they truly are negotiating also for the non-union workers, well, then you are getting a service that they're providing for you. They're providing that negotiation. Now, I would say you probably could negotiate your contract better than the drunken 80-year-old guy who has seniority, so he got his job, got to where he is. But again, if you're letting him negotiate for you, and he's providing you a service. So that's why I don't get too upset if they're having to pay a quote-unquote fair share.
Well, and that's it. You know, but now they're griping because they got to pay a fair share, even though they're benefiting with higher wages, better medical coverage, and they still get the same problems. So if you want to go into work and be an ass, you know, you're still going to have the same discipline steps that anybody else does. You know, if a non-union employee comes up to me and says, you stink and I hate working here, well, get the hell out. But if you're a union employee and you walk up to me and say the same thing, hey, well, you've got an attitude problem, what can we do to correct it? And then you want to start cussing and going off, then I'm going to sit you down and have a warning with the union steward and talk about it. You've got a step of discipline. You've got some protection. So everybody that's doing this in the public sector, taking advantage of this, that's the whole problem with the public sector. I mean, it's the same thing we argue about government. You know, we have all of these liberal, you know, freeloaders, if you will, that want something for nothing. So they're going to get the benefit but not have to pay for it. And to me, that's not right. It's not American. But I tell you what is right. We are, man, bye, my friend. Wow. We are gone. Final thoughts.
Well, we've been all over the map tonight, but the final thoughts, I think, is important to go back to the fact that we'll be here tomorrow night to do the TNT show, barring any government helicopter or forced anal raping that the government does of me. And that being said, this is the last show we're going to do together before for the filing deadline. And yeah, I talk about it a lot, and I'm sure you and Mr. Martin probably talked about it on the other nights too. And it's important because if you or a friend or a neighbor or a relative is even thinking about running for one of these political offices, this is your time to do it. This is the year. We didn't have any elections last year. You know, the yards were spared the signs. We were spared the sludge-throwing commercials. But this is your time to file if you're going to run for state senate, state rep, county clerk, mayor, metro council, soil and water preservation, school board. This is your time to do it because then you can't come back later. And if you knew you had this opportunity, you can't come back later and say, oh, I wish somebody else had run. You can't do this Mansy Pamsley ballsless stuff when you know that you have four more days left to get down to either Louisville or Frankfurt and file for one of these offices. And when you don't file for these offices and these globalists from the local level in training trying to work their way up go unopposed, then you can't stand up in the end and say death to the New World Order.
Well, there you go. And I tell you, it was really hard for me on a personal level to say no when I was asked to run. But I have run for office. I've put it on the line. Right now, one of the hardest things for me to do is to make a commitment to run for something like mayor in Louisville when we're accomplishing so much doing this. I mean, look at the people held accountable. You know, Metro Councilwoman impeached. You know, all the things with the Jimmy. Everybody knows about all that. I've never been secret with that. All the differences that we make through this venue are getting us the accountability and the transparency that we deserve and need. So to run for mayor would take that completely away from everything we've built for all this time, and we wouldn't be able to get that. So for me, the greater good is that I continue doing what I'm doing here right now because that's making a big difference in getting the transparency that we need. So, you know, I get being involved, and hopefully there's somebody out there that can step up to the plate, and I really hope it's Ken Fleming. I think Ken Fleming would be a pretty good candidate. I think he's done a great job on the Metro Council. And I'm not endorsing him or anything, but you know, if he decides to go that way, the big thing is that we will have competition and we will have a choice. Might not like choices, but you're still going to have that choice. At the end of the day, that's what we're looking for, is the choice. That's it for tonight, folks. Tomorrow night, Dale the Truth will be here at 7 o'clock with the TNT Thursday Night Truth Show. And don't forget our good friend Ken Molman with his Liberty Bridal Show right here at 7 o'clock on Sunday night. Until then, have a great night, folks. Thanks for listening. Take care.